Blog Talk Radio.
Women have the power to transform this world. We can end crime and violence if we all agree to do one thing: share. Let's share our wisdom, share our time, share our talents, share our finances, but most of all, let's share our love. This is the Female Solution. Join me, Naima Latif, every morning, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Standard Time, as we bring you stimulating discussions about the issues affecting our lives. If you're listening online at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution, press the blue button that says follow and get our daily topics every morning directly to your email and your smartphone.
Hi, I'm Naima Latif, executive producer of the Female Solution Radio Show. We invite you to call in 515-605-9325 and participate in this daily think tank as we examine the challenges we face and develop solutions that restore peace and harmony. We are global transformers, changing the world from the way it is to the way it should be. We are one. Wherever we live on this earth, we are one human family. On behalf of our team of radio hosts, I'd like to extend a greeting to all the members of our family, whenever and wherever you may be listening around the world. To our family in China, Ni Hao. In India, Namaste. In Japan, Konnichiwa. In Korea, Annyeonghaseyo. In Russia, Zdravstvuyte. In Germany, Guten Tag. In Poland, Dzień dobry. In France, bonjour. In Spain, hola. In Italy, ciao. In Egypt, ahlan wa sahlan. In Ghana, akwaba. In Nigeria, peleo. In South Africa, sawbona. In Senegal, nangadef. In Kenya, jambo. In Israel, shalom. In Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Saudi Arabia, assalamu alaikum. Greetings. And may peace be upon you all.
And this is going to be one powerful, energetic show, I feel, tonight. Because I have been living in a ashram for over a year now. And I realize at the entrance of this place are two huge lions at the gate. There's a huge gate at the entrance to this place. My housemate just pointed that out to me when I mentioned Lion's Gate. She said, well, you've been living in the Lion's Gate, at the Lion's Gate, for over a year now. Whoa, I couldn't ask for a more powerful symbol of what this show means tonight for me personally and for everyone who tunes in, because there is a powerful energy with Sirius tonight, Sirius, the planetary system here, that is going to help us all release, let go, cleanse, detox, if we are open to do that. And if we share our own personal manifestations that we'd like to see occur, then we can surely, in our heart, and make intentions and see these manifestations come to pass. So thank you for joining me this evening. My special guest, Mikhail Eubanks, is back. I think he's in the studio, and he is going to share more about his life journey, which he needs to put into a book, actually. But we're gonna before I open up Mikhail's mic, I want to just play. I did find a little something on the Lion's Gate, because that's all I've been receiving all day, is information about the Lion's Gate. And what that means, you know, Sirius is called the spiritual sun, S-U-N. And so tonight, and I think the coming couple of days are all going to be giving us from the higher authority the energy and the frequencies that we all need to shift thinking and our relationships, lots of stuff being offered to us, so that we can recharge and illuminate the truth of our soul. So that's what I believe my brother Mikhail is going to help us do tonight. is illuminate, light up the truth of our soul. So let me play this short clip on what this Lionsgate is all about for those of you who are new to this, and then we'll open up the mic because my brother has a lot to share about this about his journey over the last 70 some years, and how we can all benefit from it, because we each have a story to tell. I'm trying to find that audio. We each have a story to tell, and it's up to us to share with authenticity and transparency. And this is what I love about my brother, Mikhail. He's so transparent, and he has helped me grow as much as he's helped others grow with his teaching experience and so forth. So here's a short clip on the Lion's Gate and what we can expect tonight, or what we should be looking at, giving our attention.
Welcome to DNA Awakening, Divine Ones. Greetings, my beloved masters of the universe. A very important gateway is opening for all of us right now. A gateway of such magnitude that it is going to be a key moment in your life where you will need to make a very important decision which will affect your life for the next 3 years and 3 months. In the channeling, they say that you will be presented with three choices and you will need to choose the right one for your heart. This has to do with your occupation. I'm told that it will be happening from July 28th to August 12th. Give or take a few days, and that you need to tune into your heart in order to make the right decision. Here is the channeling that I have received. What we are trying to say to you, dearly beloveds, is that on your planes of existence at this very moment in time, a gate of transcendence, benevolence, and might shall open her gates for all to witness the timelines of their very own vocations on this planet. The timelines are being extricated and brought into alignment with the highest order, in order to unify the messianic pathways and allow each of you stationed on Gaia to instigate a birth of a new momentum for your very own paths. Your collective energies have reached a point of exasperation, and much of the stored vesicles of time and space must be realigned to meet the higher vibrational frequencies of the creator gods that you are. For through your very own vocations, and we repeat vocations, you are bringing through the ever-unfolding messianic energies which must be anchored onto your planet in the next few days before the welcoming of the transcendent energies from the very distant galaxy within the solar system of Ram. From said solar system, and yes, indeed such a solar system exists in the outskirts of said constellation of Ram, you shall receive notices of a change in your vocational statuses. Your much shall begin to swiftly shift in your lives, specifically in regard to your present earthly vocations, and a new vocational blueprint shall be laid before you, allowing you to choose from three choices in which direction you are to move into for the next 3 years and 3 months of your stationary experience on your planet. What we are trying to say to you, dearly beloveds, is that upon entrance into the world of light known in your world as particles of ascension and transcendence, you shall find yourselves brought before a blueprint, a map form which you shall be asked to select one vocational pathways to expand your consciousness for the next 3 years and the month of your earthly time frame. Why is this moment so significant for all of you? It is significant primarily because through said experience your consciousness will expand, and you shall understand even more intricately the workings of the universe through the interconnectedness and interviewing of your vesicles of times and space within the human biological structure of being, within the human timelines. From said experience, the biological timeline of human souls stationed upon your planet shall begin to shift, and it is precisely at the 3-year and 3-month mark that the event that you are all waiting for shall occur. The event which shall shift the dogmatic pathways of human misconception of time and space into the timeline of that which they have and you have chosen to experience during this monumental moment in the history of your palace, your universe, and all of creation. For the timelines have indeed been shifted away from the trajectory upon which earthlings shall thrive, and in so doing have postponed the arrival of a new wave of life. Yet it is precisely at this very moment in time that, due to your collective consciousness and your collective reawakening to self, that your energies have again shifted the trajectory onto the right path for all who are currently arriving and are birthed onto your planet as we speak. All who have been birthed and who shall be birthed within said time frame shall fall into the circle of light immemorial, from which a new human experience can begin to be built in your lifetime. A new human experience which shall shift away from all that negativity that you have experienced thus far in your journeys and return humanity onto the right pathway that shall indeed connect human souls with the divinity of that which they are. What we are trying to say to you, dearly beloved, is that tremendous shifts are taking place in the invisible world all around you, condensing timelines and expanding them as we speak, and such condensation is at the root cause of all the issues that are presently engulfing your societies and human collective consciousness. And so, and thus, it is once again going to be your mission to transcend said moment and transfigure it through your very own vocation thinking patterns and through the choices that you are to make in the days to come regarding your vocational blueprint for the next 3 years and 3 months of your time. And so and thus, on or around your new moon, July 28th to August 12th, repatterning of your own timelines and your own occupational structures shall occur. We await your decisions as to which timelines you wish to transition your very own vessels of time and space to experience, and how you wish to experience the next 3 years and 3 months of your life. Albeit the deciding factor lays with you, we advise each and every one of you to carefully weigh all the options that you shall be presented and select the option that is closest.
All right, so that's just a little bit of knowledge or information about this Lion's Gate Sirius, S-I-R-U-S, planetary movement that's going on this day, 8-8-21, which is a 3, the dates of August 8th, 2021, sum up to a 3. So we are in a very powerful energy tonight that we want to take full advantage of. And I couldn't ask for a better person to discuss the cleaning and healing that's needed in our lives, especially when it comes to skeletons in the closet maybe, but mainly skeletons in the house. We got some skeletons to talk about tonight. So I'm going to open up the mic of my dear brother, Mikael, who's in Melbourne, Florida, I think this evening, and he's going to share his story, which I think is so powerful to help us not only remember the dysfunctional energy that we, many of us, grew up with, but remember the purpose that we have now to heal and clean that, and what that history has taught us. So, Mikael, good evening. Are you there?
Yes, ma'am. I'm here.
How are you this evening?
I'm blessed. I'm blessed and highly favored, I believe, from for the way things have turned out. I'm still alive.
Hallelujah. Hallelujah. And we're
what
just entering a powerful energy tonight. I'm just excited tonight about the next 3 years and more, but especially tonight in 3 years. I was doing a meditation tonight on YouTube about the Lion's Gate, and it was just so awesome to be in that meditative space and not be looking at. I'm on a fast from news this whole week. I'm going to just try and not even open up my phone to any news items. So I'm going to really press in on this energy that's coming down from the Sirius planet and move forward. So go ahead.
Well, I'd like to say this to start off. First of all, when you told me a few days ago about the Lion's Gate, when you mentioned it, I didn't say anything to you, but I thought about the Lion of the Tribe of Judah standing up, preparing to make his move.
Hallelujah.
To return with great power.
Yes.
Vengeance.
Hallelujah.
And all of that. So, you know, maybe, you know, this Lion Gate thing has a lot of connotations involved in it. And so,
yeah.
You know, thank you for sharing that. And then
so, you know
think
what?
About, yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, you go ahead.
Oh, okay. Also, you know, I was thinking, you know, about, I had thought a long time ago, it came to me, you know, and sometimes people ask me, they'll say, well, how did you know such and such? And I'll tell them, I say, well, I said, the Almighty Spirit, the all-knowing Spirit, knows everything. And I said, a lot of times he'll teach me things that I don't know. And so then I'll speak those things as though I know them because it comes from him. And I know that, I didn't know that, but I know he does. And so he's speaking them. And so I said that to say this in relationship to what we're talking about. I was impressed that my lineage goes back to the tribe of Judah. And you know, and really the symbol for that tribe was a lion. And so I just thought I'd throw that in.
Awesome thoughts. You know, all of these, yeah. I think all of these thoughts are relevant tonight as we prepare to heal and cleanse and move to the next level of our journey, as that audio was suggesting, that we prepare to go to a new level. And, you know, Friday we left off, for those of you who didn't hear the show on Friday, when Mikael shared a lot about his war, Vietnam War history, and we were talking about war versus divine health. And I was led to ask both you and Kwame about what authority you reported to when you were in the military, and you both said, well, captains, and then the thought came to me that in wartime, who do we listen to in wartime? Well, we decided on Friday, we're definitely in a spiritual war, a mental war, three types, psychological, biological, chemical war going on, and we now have to listen to a higher authority if we're going to win this war. And it's so appropriate tonight that the planet Sirius is speaking to us in many ways energetically to hear the energy of Sirius, but most important to hear and clarify what you're going to tell us tonight, Mikael, about your childhood. We didn't talk about Mikael's childhood on Friday. Usually I ask my guests to start with the childhood so we can know a little bit about them. But I was somehow led to say, no, let's talk about war and war from war to divine health. Now tonight, we want to go into Mikael's childhood because I just think it's not only entertaining, but so educational for us to learn how we got into that dysfunctional family dynamics in the, 30s, all the way back to the 20s and 30s. So, Mikael, will you share with us your childhood adventure? I call it childhood adventure.
Yes, surely. And, you know, as I think, I've learned this recently, and as I study the scriptures and everything, I realize that those heroes, those different patriarchs and so forth, when they did something, they did it in the name of the Almighty, Yahuwah. And so what I'm sharing with those of you that are listening, that's I'm doing this in behalf of him. I'm doing this in his name because I'm hoping that, you know, that someone, you know, I was even, you know, contacting my grandchildren to hear this, because some of these things I don't believe I've even told them. I've told them excerpts. My grandchildren, I don't think they've heard any of it, but my children, you know, they've heard, I believe, excerpts. And actually there's so much I can't even, so much that I won't tell you, that I won't be able to tell you during this telecom. And, you know, maybe we could do it in the future or possibly or no. But anyway, start off, I was given away twice. I was given away when I was a baby. And I stayed with my second mother for 5 years. And I was born in Brooklyn.
and we lived in Queens. My second mother, she lived in, I'm not even sure, but I think it was either, you know what, from what I remember, recall, because, you know, I remember earlier when I thought about it, where we were, we lived in the Bronx. So I was born in Brooklyn. I lived for a very short while in Queens. And then I was given to, first, but the one that I call my second mother, she passed away. And she passed away at an early age, and I hate that. I didn't get to spend time with her like I would like to have. But anyway, she kept me until I was five. When I was five, and she was a distant cousin, not a cousin through blood, but a distant cousin. And so I always wondered, and I never really asked anyone, why I was given away the first time and why I was given to her. Okay, so I never knew that. All right, then my aunt, who lived in Detroit at the time, she had one of my brothers staying with her, but he just stayed with her for like the summer. Okay, she wanted him to stay permanently. My dad didn't allow for it, so he told her about me, and so she asked for me. And so they left Detroit, and they came for me. At that particular time, I was 5 years old. And so my dad took me from my second mom, brought me to where, you know, they were staying. And so I was able to spend a little time, I guess, with my brothers. Okay, I had three brothers and no sisters. All right, so my aunt and uncle, they came for me and brought me to Detroit, to this house that we're talking about. And that house was an amazing house. It looked like the White House. It was a huge house with pillars, just like the White House, and it was white. And it had three stories, 14 rooms, and pretty much my aunt, she wore the pants in the family. My uncle, he was a hardworking man. He would work hard. He worked in the factory, worked at Chrysler. And he would just come home and bring his check and give it to her. She'd take care of the bills, you know, and all of that. He really wasn't really a father image. So I didn't have a father image coming up. Okay. My aunt, she was more like the man of the house, so to speak. I mean, there's something going down where you need, you know, strong masculinity. Then he would stand up and step up to the plate. All right. But as far as taking care of the business and so forth and stuff, she did that. He didn't do much as far as fixing things or whatever. People used to laugh about because he really wasn't a Mr. Fix-It. But anyway, getting to the house. Okay. I've told people this, various people at various times in my life, even recently. I've told them I've seen things in that house that no child should have seen. No child should have been exposed to the things that I was exposed to. And I'll say this, I've even had nightmares of things about that house and even about that neighborhood. Not that the neighborhood wasn't a bad neighborhood, but it was just that in those nightmares that I had, it would be somewhere in that neighborhood. And sometimes I'd be lost and searching for whatever I was searching for in the dream. Okay. But I've had nightmares about that house. And even up until, I'd say, the last 10 years.
Wow.
And so I tried everything that I knew to get over that, get it, you know, cleansed out of my system so that I wouldn't, you know, I didn't want to go back to that. I wanted to be free from that. And so I feel now that I am pretty much free. I mean, I think about it, I can talk about it, I can laugh and you know, make jokes or whatever. But I remember, you know, there was so many spirits in that house because, as I said, it was a 14-room house, and we rented rooms, okay? So we had roomers. Now, there were times, though, when we had no roomers, and I was thinking about that just yesterday in preparation mentally for this, you know, this talk. And I was thinking, I was remembering sometimes how I was left home alone. And that huge house was scary. That house was scary and creepy. I mean, I heard things. I heard things there that I didn't see. And, you know, one time I even heard something going up the stairs. We had a long staircase that went up the back of the house all the way up to the third floor. And it's like when my parents would be gone, and I'm there by myself, and I was so scared. I would get under the stove. We had one of those type of stoves. I know it was kind of elevated. And, you know, I was little. I was very little. I was, you know, I guess when I was getting under that stove, I wasn't any older, I would say, than maybe 7 or 8 or something like that. But there was times when I would be left alone in that big old house, and we didn't have any roomers. So I was the only ones that were in the house was my dog and I, and we both would be under. Because my dog, he used to go, he would go under that stove.
Wow.
But hopefully he would relax, but be kind of warm under there and everything.
Let me ask you a question. How old was this house at that? Was this house built by your uncle and I, or were they the first occupants, or how old was the house?
That house, I believe, they weren't the first owners, but I believe that house was built around the 30s.
Oh, okay.
It was an old house, very, very creaky. It was, you know, the stairway, you know, the wood floors and everything, you know, and then it had rugs on the floor and carpet in some areas. And, you know, the stairways creaked and everything. And like I said, times when I would be under that stove, it seemed like I could hear something going up those stairs, up to the attic. And I'm like, what is that? But, hey, you know, I'm under the stove. I'm not trying to find out what it was. I'm just trying to be hidden under that stove. Because under that stove, you could be in the kitchen, but you wouldn't know that the dog and I was under that stove because you couldn't see. I mean, you couldn't really see unless you got down and looked under there. So
right. We
figured we were safe. No one, you know, if any monsters or anything, I used to think there were monsters down in that basement. That basement was creepy. I was telling you, Viola, about that that huge basement we had, and then there was one room that didn't have a concrete floor. It was a dirt floor, and then that floor was a big chest where I always expected some kind of skeleton to come up out of that thing when I would be down in the basement. I used to hate to go down there. But
so you had Halloween energy in the basement, huh?
Yes. Well, see, back when I was a kid, there was a late night show that would come on the weekends called Shock Theater. And it would start off with a casket, and then here you got this casket opens, and then a skeleton comes up and rises. And so I was expecting to see that down in that basement, in that little room that didn't have, any floor, you know, except a dirt floor. Whereas the rest of the, and so it was so creepy. I zoomed past that room and hoped that the door. I wasn't going to try to close the door, but I would hope that the door would be closed because
okay,
I didn't want to look in there.
Mikhail, we got to take a break. So hold that thought. Mikhail's in the basement at this point. We're going to work our way up the stairs into the house, into this haunted house, so to speak. But we're going to be right back. Thank you all for joining. If you have a comment or a question for our guest, call 215-383-5863. And Naima Latif, our executive producer, is going to play some commercials for us. Thank you, Naima. Go ahead. And we'll be right back after this.
You are tuned in to the Soulful Chicago Book Fair 2020 Vision Fundraising Campaign. That's right. You can support the vision of reviving Black literary excellence in this city by simply taking your $20 or more and donating it on our website. Visit www.soulfulchicagobookfair.com and click the Donate tab on our homepage, or give us a call at 646-359-6605, and we welcome you, helping us breathe literary life into the South Side of Chicago.
Do you want to live in a world without war? Join our global peace movement. Heavenly Culture World Peace Restoration of Light transcends culture, religion, ideology, and other boundaries to achieve peaceful harmony in the global society. HWPL is committed to bringing world peace and cessation of war through peaceful dialogue between religious groups. I am Director Shin-Suk Kim of the HWPL Chicago Branch of North America. Join us for our next gathering. Call 773-580-1501 and be a part of the movement for world peace. Email us at chicagohwpl@gmail.com.
Hi, I'm Jody Susan with Susan Essentials. I started Susan Essentials in 2015 because of a personal health journey. I was over-medicated and put on 19 different medications. And yes, I reversed all my chronic diseases using plant and energy-based healing. It was amazing. At Susan Essentials, we support both consumers and businesses. And we do that with helping your employees or yourself with a food as medicine mindset. How Susan Essentials supports businesses and consumers is we teach people about a food as medicine mindset. So we support people on how to support their own immune system, how to support their brain health, how to support their emotional well-being. And we do that all with plant and an energy-based healing.
And we are back. Thank you for joining us this evening. We have several people in the studio who already pressed one, but we're going to let my guest tonight is Mikhail Eubanks. He was our guest on Friday, Health and Wellbeing, and we had to have him come back because he never even got to the house story, which we started listening about, because this house is a typical house, I think, for many families back in the maybe 20s, 30s, because even my dad, who lived to be 95 and died in 2019, even my dad told me stories in New Orleans, Louisiana, actually it was in Chicago. You know what, Mikhail, this whole northern experience was pretty dysfunctional for a lot of people. My dad's family would get drunk on the weekend, and he would have to clean up all the vomit and the mess, and so that's how I related to your story as well, because he told me that's in the book we wrote together, Sherman Howard. So, Mikhail, you were talking, we left off with you sharing about the basement and the skeletons, yes. And please continue.
All right, we're coming up out of the basement. I remember I was afraid of monsters. I always thought there were monsters somewhere in that basement. And, you know, when I would come up, I noticed when my grandmother would send me down, because I had to go down to the basement to do a lot of stuff. I had to shovel coal. As a child, I was telling you, Viata, how that when I was a teenager, I was about as strong as any man, because I did shoveling of coal. I had to fill the stoker. I had, that stoker hold, I don't even know how much, but I had a huge, it was a big shovel, and sometimes I had to go down there at night and do that, and I'm thinking about monsters and stuff. My grandma, she said, "Go on, boy." That's how she would talk. the Guamba ground down there. There ain't no monasteries, and that's what she would say, monasteries. Because there's no monasteries down there. Get your butt down there. She didn't curse or nothing, but my aunt cursed, could out curse a sailor. She was mean. And I was thinking about this, you know, the Native American that's in our family was highly manifested in her, and it would come out strongly when she would drink, and she drank a lot. She drank often, almost every day they drank. And I like to say this, too. When I came from New York, I was a beer drinker. The people that I lived with, my second mother, when she would go to her, I guess, cousins or sisters or wherever that was, I remember the parties. You know, they would party hard. I remember they used to eat a lot of shrimp. I used to love shrimp and shrimp and rice. And they would drink. And obviously they gave me drink because by the time I came to Detroit, when the people would get together with my aunt, because she always liked to get together with folk on the weekend, they drink, and I mean, they would just drink till they get sloppy, drunk, and stuff. And all right, when they would bring out the beer bottles, I would be in my room or something, I would hear them rattling beer bottles, and then I come out running out of work. I want a beer. And they were like, that boy want a beer. Give him a beer. And so they would give me a beer. They thought it was cute. You know, here's this, you know, this 5-6-year-old boy running out talking about he wants a beer. And so they would give me a beer. And that went on for a couple of years until my grandmother, she stopped it. She told them, she said, don't give that boy any beer. Stop. Y'all stop doing that. And, you know, of course, the old school people, they listen to those old folk. And so they eventually stopped me from drinking the beer. And, you know, long story short about that, when I grew up, I hated beer. I had no desire for beer. But, however, I did develop a taste for whiskey and gin, primarily gin, because that was my uncle's drink. You know, he used to drink Booth's High and Dry. But I never saw him drunk. You know, my aunt, she would get sloppy, drunk, pass out, and all kind of stuff. And he would drink by himself usually. He didn't usually drink with the crew that would be in the kitchen. Those would be my aunt's friend. They were his friends too, but he didn't usually drink with them. He usually drank by himself in his bedroom. And he would listen to country music, bluegrass, and all that stuff. And talk to the hillbillies that's performing on the radio, like he was there with them. And nice. So, yeah, I got to really kind of appreciate country music and bluegrass coming up, you know. And I knew all those artists because he would always, you know, talk about them, and then I would listen to the radio broadcast too and stuff. But long story short,
how old were you when you first moved into the house, and how old were you when you started drinking?
Okay, I was five when I came in, and I stayed there. When we moved, I believe I was about 17. I think I was about 17. But
you started drinking.
Well, yes. What they would do as far as the drinking was concerned, as I was telling you, there was so many spirits. There was so much stuff going on. As I was thinking about it a little earlier, I was thinking about there was temp and prostitute, and there was all kind of crookedness. I mean, there was lying and cheating and moonshining and all of that stuff, numbers playing and numbers booking. My folks were booking numbers as well as playing them. I don't know if you all, everybody's familiar with bookies and what they do. But anyway, and we used to have run-ins. We used to have run-ins with the Italians. They call them Dagos. And you know, it would be funny. They send me to the door. They booking the numbers. Now, these Dagos coming for their money. And you know, it was my cousin and my aunt was the primary, you know, big wheelers and dealers, because my cousin, she was what they call a numbers woman, because, you know, it was her business. And my aunt, she was my aunt's daughter. And she was about she was about 18 years older than me, and so you know, she was grown, and she was like a numbers dealer, but she was also booking the numbers. And see, that meant she was keeping money that was supposed to be going to those Italians. All right, they would come out. They would come out to the house to collect their money. And all right, she's trying to hide inside from them. She's not facing them because she's keeping that money. And so she sends me to the door. She sends me to the door. Tell them I'm not here. All right, so I go to the door and I say, she says she's not here. And then when I come back, they're like, what the hell? You, she says she's not here. You tell them. So they will ridicule me. I went through a lot of ridicule. I went through a lot of abuse, mental, physical, emotional, you name it. And, you know, and some people used to say, say it was sexual, too. I was, you know, sexually abused there. You know, mental sexual abuse more that I remember more so than actual physical. I mean, I saw people exposed, people doing stuff. I saw people being raped. You know, I saw, you know, even, you know, a woman, you know, and who they pulled a train on this woman. You know, I've heard people talk about all kind of stuff because my bedroom was really right beside the kitchen. And so I could hear a lot of things. I could hear a lot of things that those old folk were saying. And sometimes, you know, as a kid, you know, you're gonna kind of crack your door and maybe kind of peep out and see what you can see. But I couldn't really see a lot because I was kind of afraid I'd be caught. So I was just listening, you know, and you're not supposed to. Children were supposed to be seen and not heard. But I heard those older people, and I like to say this too. When I came there at five, my aunt was, she was 47. Okay. And I remember when I went to school and saw the other kids' parents, they were much younger, and I was always embarrassed. I was embarrassed of her. Now, she never really came to school, but one time. She only came to school one time because she said, I'm not going to school to get you out of trouble. And so I tried to stay out of trouble. But, you know, her being older, and I'm saying this to say this, I was around older people. I was listening to older people and seeing what older people do, what they say, and what it did. It helped me to mentally be ahead of those kids that were my age as far right. as life experience. Because I was hearing and seeing all kind of stuff. And not only that, as a, you know, I was telling you, I was drinking, you know, when they broke me up from drinking the beer, well, when they would get drunk and everybody's laid out or whatever, gone, they would leave a corner in those whiskey bottles and they would leave the chaser, the squirt, the 7-Up on there. And so here I would go in there, everybody's asleep, everybody's gone. And I'd go ahead and make me a mixed drink. I'd mix that squirt with squirt with some whiskey, and then she would have me a little mixed drink, and here I am drinking. Nobody knew that. And so, you know, I didn't get drunk enough, but I was getting high off of it. And but the amazing thing was I never became a drinker. I would drink socially as I grew up, but I never would drink. I never became a drinker. My aunt, I believe, I'm almost sure she was really, she would have been considered an alcoholic because she drank all the way up to her 90s plus and everything.
When did she
die?
What did she die of?
She really died of complications, heart, you know, complication of the heart. She died at 107, and she was drinking all the way up to she was about 96, and you know, drinking hard whiskey all that time. But anyway, after I started drinking like that, we also in the attic, we had a still, as I said, everything was going on in that house. We had a still up there, and so they, you know, my uncle was moonshining. And so, you know, and so I would have to deliver the moonshine. He'd take the orders, and then he'd have these gallon jugs filled with moonshine. And, okay, I'm delivering them. Well, being, and I think when I started delivering, I think I was about 10. Might have been 9, but I remember around 10. And so I remember when I would take the orders out, you know, and here I got the moonshine over my shoulder, this gallon jug, and I'm looking at this, what they call white lightning. I'm like, and I'm hearing about it and everything, and I'm like, how does that taste? And so next thing you know, I'm tasting some of it before I deliver it. I take that cork out, and I'm drinking some of it straight. I'm drinking white lightning straight from the jug.
Oh my goodness.
So I go ahead and deliver it, you know, come back. Nobody knows that I drank, so, because, you know, I only drank a little bit, you know, basically the taste. And I would do that when I would make the deliveries. Okay, now here, this is like, as I said, you know, my aunt and her daughter, my cousin, they were running the numbers game, okay? So I would have to also go and do pickup. Because I was like a pickup man. So I got to go and pick up. I'd go to the neighbors and pick up their whatever they plan, the numbers that they plan to give me, their tickets. I'd collect those tickets, and I'd collect their money, and I'd bring that home. Okay, here I am, you know, 8, 9 years old. You know, I'm playing the numbers, too, because I want to, you know, I'm like, okay, they want the money. I want to win some, too. So I'm playing numbers. You know, as a kid, you know, I'm playing numbers, and I hit a couple of times. But anyway, so here I am, you know, off into all of that. All right, then here we're in this house. They're doing all this. They're doing numbers. They're running moonshine. All right, then they also they did like what you call tables, where they. You know, some of you may know about how they have card games, and they cut the tables. So you're making money like they do in a casino. You got your people. And so they did that, you know, and so they would cut the tables. They would sell liquor and sell dinners and cut the table. So you got money making all through all those various avenues. Okay, people get drunk. And I remember this one time, this woman, she was drinking with the group of folk, you know, my aunt and them, and she just passed out. She drank so much, she passed out. She couldn't go home. She fell asleep on the on our living room couch. And at that particular time, I was older. I think I was about 11 when this happened. And I remember because my room had changed. And so I was up near the living room instead of back in the kitchen. And so I kept hearing noises, you know, as I told you, it was the stairs were creaky because it was an old, you know, frame house and everything. And I, you know, here I am trying to sleep this particular weekend night. I'm trying to sleep and I'm hearing the stairs. I'm like, well, what's all this going up and down the stairs and everything? And so I get up. And I kind of go to my door, and I just peep. I crack the door, and I peep out, and I'm seeing the rumors. I see different rumors coming downstairs, and what are they doing? And then I'm hearing noises, and I'm hearing sexual noise. But I didn't know that it was sexual noise because I'm a child. And so I'm hearing this, and then I realize these rumors are coming down here. They're raping this woman, and I'm appalled. I'm thinking, and I'm angry, and I'm like, you low, you know, and I'm like cussing them in my under my breath and stuff, and I'm like, what can I do to stop them? And so I wanted to really choke them, but there was nothing I could do because these were men. I'm like, okay, I'm just a child. I can't fight them. I can't. There's nothing I could do, and so. But I thought about this and said, I'll go and I'll stand out there. And if they see me, then they'll leave her alone. And so I went out, and I just stood near her. And I put a scowl on my face for the next one who was coming downstairs, you know. And so he came down, and then he looked at me and said, "You want some?" And I was like, I was like, no. As a child, I didn't even know what to say or do after that. I was like, I think I went back in my room. I went back in my room. I just was,
let's put a pause on that, because I'm feeling the pain of that woman. And yeah. The anger is there for real. I'm sure a lot of the people in the studio might be feeling this, that how could men be so cold and callous? And were they drunk too? Was that why? Was that an excuse for that, or what the hell? You know, I look at men. Men have drugs that they use for their pain, and that one of them is sex, alcohol, yeah, and then food. To me, in my experience, those are the three primary reasons the three things that men will use to soothe their pain and get comfort of, or relief, anesthetize themselves, or so to speak. Sex, alcohol or drugs, and food. What was going on with those men? Were they drunk, or were these? Then you said these were older men, and these were black men, right?
Yes, these were black men, they weren't drunk, because one of them was an 18-year-old boy. He didn't drink with them. I mean, well, I have to say he was an 18-year-old man. And the weird thing about it was everybody called him Mr. Percy. I'll never forget him. Because here, you know, I mean, he would teach me bad stuff. I mean, he used to have a slingshot, teach me how to shoot pigeons and stuff, shoot at people's window as they would drive by and all kind of stuff in their car. And he was really what we used to call a bad boy, a bad influence on me. But he was one of those that had that woman, 18 years old. And so
he's knocked out cold, and basically they're raping a corpse almost.
There you go. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Okay.
And so anyway, that next day she I don't know how she slept through all of that, but she was really out. And so then she wakes up the next morning. She's telling my aunt somebody messed with her. And as she's telling my aunt that somebody's messing her, I'm thinking, you know, of course I didn't say anything, but I'm thinking a whole lot of people mess with a whole,
so
you know, a lot.
How many men would you estimate were performing that?
It was a minimum of six. Mm-hmm. I've always thought it was at least seven of them. But I would say at least it was a minimum of six.
So, this is the dysfunctional energy, the unhealthy energy that we still, I think, need to heal on some level. Because where did that come from? You know, I think about their parents, those men's parents, were wondering if they had that type of thing going on in their young life that they could even perform or do that type of thing. So it's really just kind of hard to believe. And you even said something about the past. I remember you mentioned something about a pastor did the same. One of the men you witnessed in that house doing that type of activity was a pastor, right?
Yeah, I told you about the pastor. Now, that was a different time, but the pastor, I remember his name. You know, I'm not going to say it over the air, but I remember he always came. He was a very dark, tall man, and he didn't look. He wasn't a handsome man. He wasn't tall, dark, and handsome. But he was. They called him a reverend, and he would come and drink with them, okay? Mm-hmm. And you know, and people used to laugh because they said, yeah, he's the one that stole your uncle's, they called my uncle James. And they would say, he's the one that stole James' Bible, family Bible. My uncle had a real nice family Bible, And that he used to, you know, he used to read, even though he did a lot of gross stuff, he would read his Bible every day, which was kind of paradoxical. But that preacher stole his Bible when he would go to work. Okay, and so this particular day that they had been drinking, you know, and the preacher was drinking with them, my aunt, she got what they call running drunk. She was about drunk out of her head. And, you know, and so she was out. She was knocked out. And, you know, here I am. I'm hearing noise. I'm wondering, like, what's going on in the next room. And okay, so in my room, there was a hole in the wall where I could see in the other room. Okay, and so I looked, and I had tissue in that hole because I didn't want anybody looking through the hole at me, and I didn't want to be looking through at any. But I kept hearing noise, and I'm like, my uncle is gone to work, and why am I hearing the bed squeaking? And my aunt, she's knocked out. And so I'm hearing that noise, and so I'm like, let me look through this hole. And so I look through the hole, and here I'm seeing the preacher. He's in the bed with my aunt. And I'm like, that, you know, I mean, I was really, once again, I wanted to do some damage, but what could I do? I'm just a child. So I just went ahead, and I was just cussing him out under my breath, but I just went ahead and put that tissue back into that hole. And I never told anybody. Coming up, I never told anybody that preacher, how much of a lowlife he was. And my uncle's gone to work, and he in the bed. And my aunt, I don't believe she ever even realized that he did that. Because she was out of it. She was totally out of it.
So was prostitution going on there? You think they were paying women? Was that part of the house activity?
Well, that did. I think I had told you one time about the neighbor down the street. She would come. She had a young. She was a cougar. She had a young boyfriend that would meet her on the weekends. They would come to the house. They would rent a room because I told you, you know, it was a rooming house, and so they would rent a room, and you know, she had a hardworking husband. You know, I used to go down and get my hair cut down with him, and he worked, I think, in a factory too sometime. His regular job was a factory job. But anyway, he was a hardworking man. The man had no idea that his wife is down there, you know, cheating on him with this young man. And there was this other older man. He had this white woman that he would meet, you know, certain times of the month. He would come and he would rent a room with her. And I remember she didn't know how to wear lipstick, man. She, you know, she had lipstick on, and like, she was a redhead. But, you know, so there was all kind of stuff, as I said, that was going on there. You know, sometimes when my room was back in the kitchen, you know, I hear them talking about, you know, sexual stuff. They're showing themselves to each other, exposing themselves to each other, all kind of stuff like that. And I'm hearing that. I didn't see it, but I heard it. I heard what they were saying. I hear them talking about, well, look under the table, and then look under the table, and whatever, whoever was showing what, the women showing themselves, the men showing themselves, all kind
of
stuff.
Okay, I think we need to take a break. Okay, Naima Latif is ready. Let's take a break. Everybody take a deep breath, pause. And we've got a few people who have pressed one. They'd like to ask some questions or comments. So thank you for sharing that very dramatic, interesting part of your life. It's like, I don't know why you haven't wrote a book up to now. I'm going to help you write a book about with this information.
Unmuted.
We'll be right back after these messages. with our executive producer, Naima Lexi.
I'm Beata, your holistic life coach. These days, it's more important than ever to work on your physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual health. Are you consciously breathing deeply in stressful moments? Do you have a plan or daily routine to maintain balance in your awesome body? Are you struggling to be disciplined in your eating habits? When you partner with me, I'll help you develop a personalized health plan that works for your particular lifestyle. You can find out more about me at yourholisticlifecoach.com, where you can also review my 3-step protocol to guide you to abundant health. That's yourholisticlifecoach.com, and I'm Viato.
Do you worry about finances, family, health, job, relationships? Are you in pain? Do you feel stuck? If you answered yes to any of these questions, help is available. Don't worry, you're not alone. It's part of the human process. You only feel this way because you haven't mastered the voices in your head. No hype, just down-to-earth, solid, workable tools and techniques that you can practice daily. It's really food for the soul. Whether you want to learn how not to worry about anything, reverse type 2 diabetes, publish a book, promote your product or service, or just make extra money. To take advantage of the deal of the day, go to ZeldaSpeaks.com or call 312-409-6619. Mention promo code TheFemaleSolution and get free shipping. That's ZeldaSpeaks.com or 312-409-6619. Stop worrying today. Visit ZeldaSpeaks.com.
Hi, this is John Alexander.
And I'm Naima Latif. Meet people like you who are making a positive difference in the world.
Big difference.
Watch us every day on The Media Connection at www.youtube.com/TheMediaConnectionTV.
YouTube it. We'll see you soon.
There are people who choose to make a positive difference in the world. Our job is to bring you their stories to motivate you to do the same. Join us each week, host John Alexander and Naima Latif, as we bring you the educators, entertainers, elected officials, religious leaders, and community activists whose works are transforming this world. Find out how you can make a difference too. Be inspired. Watch The Media Connection.
Mondays at 5 p.m. and Tuesdays at 12 noon on cable TV, Channel 19 in Chicago. And other cities, check your local cable listings.
Thank you all for being here this evening. Our whole purpose and reason for having this discussion tonight is so that we can cleanse and heal the skeletons and the dysfunctional energy that has been with many of our families for hundreds of years. I know in Chicago, where I was born and raised, my mother and her friends got drunk on weekends as well. There was none of that going on that Mikhail described, but we would, you know what, Mikhail, we were partying. My mother and her friends were drunk and the kids were dancing. We were listening to Motown and dancing. So ours was fairly innocent, but the alcohol definitely played a major role in my parents' lives, and some of us are still addicted to that spirit. It's a real spirit that alcohol takes over in a person's body, and this is one of the reasons tonight why we need to heal it and get rid of it and become teetotalers, if you will, because it has brought much destruction, rape, and just the description that Mikhail has brought us about what went on with one woman is just despicable. But let's go on to our calls. 336-350, your mic is open. I believe that's Mama AZ. You have a comment or question for our guest tonight?
Dr. V, can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
This is deep. My dear brother, this Lord, this is, you're going to have another show and another show and another show, because this is deep. When he mentioned, when you mentioned the white lightning, brother, it took me right, it zoomed me back to Fort Bragg and the white lightning, and they told me that I was dancing on the tables, and they had to take me, you know, back to my room and put me to bed. That's what the white lightning did. But let me ask you this. When did you come to the planet? You have a very, Dr. V, you and this brother have been in other lives together, and how I know this, the trees are talking to me. These trees are speaking up and telling me that you and this brother have been in another life together. At least one.
Yeah.
Oh, you know about that?
Yeah, I think we were brother and sister in another life, but it wasn't
yeah,
that life.
Okay, but when did you come to the planet? Today is the third, and it's interesting that, I mean, it's a three, the energy that you're talking about this, because it's also reminding me of my brother Bobby and things that he has shared with me, with my mom, about my mom, and the doctor's wife that brought me to the planet. It's another show that I will share this. But, brother, when did you come to the planet? When is your Earth Day or your born day?
Yeah, I was born July 14, 47.
Wow. Okay, what does that add up to, Dr. V? His life plan. Let me see. That's 7/14. That's 3. And I don't have a pen, and I'm can't add it up in my head right now. What's that energy path, Dr. V?
He's 3 and 11. Okay, I think he's a 5.
What?
Either 5. Yes. 7/14/47 is a 5.
Okay, so you added up all of his digits and it came to a 5.
Right.
Well, that's deep. You got 3 5s right there. He came to somebody when he was 5, and I believe he said it's 14 rooms in that house, right?
Yes.
Okay, so that's another 5. And then you got his energy path number, and you said it's a 5. Holy moly.
Yes.
Deep. Yeah.
And he had brothers and 3 stories in the house, and today on this Lionsgate is a 3.
That's right. That's what I said. Wow. This is really deep.
We've got other callers.
Go ahead.
I'm going to leave your mic open. Mute your mic till you're ready to speak again. Let me get to some other callers. 779-801, your mic is open.
What's the greeting for today? Welcome to the Lions Gate.
Yes. Okay, that sounds good.
This is Maika. Maika, I didn't get a chance to... thank you for being on the show on Friday, but I'm Maika, and I've enjoyed listening to your story.
Well, thank you. It's good to hear your voice again, Maisha.
Yes, and sure. I don't know in what state you are in now, but liberation is available for everybody because this is the Lion's Gate. And so I would like to offer a tapping if someone would ask me to.
Absolutely, honey. We would love to include that in the show tonight because that's what this is all about, cleaning and healing.
Yeah.
I'm sure there are a lot of people in the studio or who are listening who might relate to that. So if you're going to be with us, let's hold off that until the next half hour.
You determine when.
Okay, great. I think that's an excellent idea. Thank you, Maika. And I'll leave your mic open if you want to mute while I go to the next caller.
Alrighty.
It's all about spiritual warfare, Andrew Nelson Day in Chicago. I want to discuss this matter of pedophilia and child sexual predation and alcoholism. But my truth today is that religious truth, although it may be relative, is not subjective. And that's a very important point. I got that from current Universal House of Justice member Paul Lample. And everything that I think, say, and do is spiritual warfare. We do what we are rather than are what we do. And, you know, the human entity is a spirit being. There is so much information that needs to be shared with so many people who've been so utterly deceived by this COVID-19 pandemic. But it's, in the words of Minister Farrakhan, a pestilence from heaven. And everything is in divine order.
Thank you, Brother Andrew Nelson. I mentioned that to a woman today, that everything was in divine order. And I was just surprised that she rejected the word divine and saying something like it was too religious or something like, or whatever. I'm moving on. I'm not debating about everything that comes out of my mouth anymore. So I'm glad that you can agree with us tonight that we're in a spiritual warfare and everything really is in divine order. And let's just keep healing and cleansing. You know, it's just beautiful to me that Mikael is so transparent about this and sharing this, something that has probably been going on with so many people's lives and ancestors and grandparents. And we need to get these skeletons out and talk about them. And then as Maika is going to do some tapping about it. Let me go to the next caller, 779-777. Your mic is open. Are
you
there?
Yes, hello?
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. You got a little background noise. Is that Brother Kofi? Brother Kofi, is that you?
My fan going on, so let me move around. Hello?
Okay, what's up? What's on your mind?
Hey, the trees, they outlive everybody, so go hug a tree. You know, the earth,
right.
You know, doesn't care about us. We need to respect the earth. That brother, because I did the same thing as a child when my parents had a party in the basement. I had a room in the basement, and they had like a cooler refrigerator full of beer and pop. So I went to the cooler, and there was no more beer. There was no more pop. So guess what I pulled out at 7 years old?
A beer.
You know, I drink beer today, and I don't drink alcohol or whatever, but that, you know, I got that when I was a child. I drank a beer, you know. And the spiritual warfare, there is no spiritual warfare. If you entertain, if you give the attention to what they're doing, you give them power. Don't give them no attention, because you already know that the war is over, because we have choices. You understand? Don't feed into what they're doing. The last thing I want to ask a brother is, are you indigenous American, or you are, you think you're from Africa? Hello?
Well, my people are from Madagascar.
From where?
They're from Madagascar. Madagascar is an island east off of the east coast of Africa.
Madagascar is the most, there is no killing, no raping. It's a separate island in Africa. It's very righteous. How do you know that you're from there?
We've done our family tree.
Yes, you question. Are your parents from your grandparents from the South, Mississippi, Arkansas, Tennessee, Alabama?
South Carolina.
Okay, my great grandparents were from South Carolina too. We never came from Africa, brother. But we are connected. Africans are cousins. We have a connection with them because the world is together. And you are American. Our birthright is in America. And this is the issue. You can go to my page. I'm a Sox fan, baby. And here, you know, I'm talking about it. The transatlantic slave trade never happened. You know the original name for the Atlantic Ocean? You know what it's called? You can Google this. It's in the British Museum. It's called Ethiopian Ocean. Okay? So now, what I'm saying is, if you put your mind in Africa and your body's in America, you can't build here. You can't build in America. Okay? I've already checked Jesse Jackson. He called us African Americans when he ran for president. I talked to him on the phone. I said, Jesse, you don't look like no African to me. He choked up, almost had a heart attack. He said, that brother, right. I got Cherokee in my bloodline. Boom, there it is. So this is the issue that we all are having. You know, they separated. They told us they brought us here on boats, and, you know, and that never happened. We're here. We are here. We were already here. That song called, we were already here in America. This is my power. I have an American spirit. Pangea was the whole world, the whole connected to Africa. So, you know, it broke up with earthquakes and oceans. It broke up. The continents broke up. But we were here in America. This is your power, brother. You have power. So now when you know that you are a Native American, now you have the spirit of the Northern Hemisphere. Now you're going to build. You're going to stop complaining. You're going to connect to nature again. You're going to stop complaining. You're going to build. I build. I help people build because I know I'm asking you a question. Guess where all the inventions come from? The doorknob, the shoe machine, traffic light, elevator. Guess who made those?
I know a lot of people invented those.
Black American men, not African men, Black American men created all those inventions. Traffic light, we created a global economy.
Yes.
And we protect that. So aren't traffic lights all over the world? They know who we are. White folks thank me. I said, thank you, brother. I said, why? Why are you thanking me? Man, I'm so tired of lying to you. You know, 1830, Andrew Jackson, you took your land through the Gullah Wars and took your land in the South. Wow. You friend me. I ain't got to drink no beer no more. I'm picking up a Bible because of you. I'm like, wow. You see? So,
Thank you.
All right, let that brother talk a little more. I want to hear what that brother got to say.
Okay, so I'm going to let Mikhail respond to that, especially in light of the division that we now have in our country. And when you look at your story, Mikhail, what can we begin to do to heal from all that abuse? Not just abuse of women, but abuse of self, because all that alcohol is killing people. It killed my mother for sure. My mother died at 66. She had many years of alcohol abuse on her body. So what do you think? Where are we today that we can begin to stop anesthetizing ourselves with food, drugs, and alcohol?
Well, I'd like to say this. You know, the influence of coming up in that environment had such an impact on me. I was so dysfunctional when I got married. A lot of that dysfunction manifested in my marriage, even though I tried to control it. I tried to control it, I guess, through just willpower, religion, and such. And, but you know, stuff did still come out, and basically, you know, having become a Christian, I attempted to live a Christian life, but then the dysfunction was there also. So it was like a dual sort of situation. And then that was, you know, impacting the family, and long story short, ended up in divorce. And so, you know, then, you know, here's that trauma added to, you know, I'm having to live with the thoughts of, you know, and it's not, you know, it's not something that you just get over, because not only, you know, that was there the drinking and so forth, I had a lot of anger because I felt that my aunt hated me. She used to beat me for nothing a lot of times. She did the drinking and just knocked me upside the head. One time she broke a plate over my head, hit me in the head with a broomstick. I mean, she was just, she, you know, as I told you earlier, okay, like the brother was saying, I recognized that we had strong Native American in our family, and I said it would manifest strongly in my aunt when she would drink, because, you know, she would drink, raise hell, cause people out, you know, pull a knife on people. I've seen her cut a couple of people. They used to call her Blady May because she was such a hellion. And she'd take a butcher knife and come at you in a minute. She'd take a butcher knife. Sometimes kids would be cutting through our yard, and she'd take a butcher knife, go out there on the porch and cuss them out and threaten them. And so, you know, that type of stuff, and like, you know, as I told, I don't know if I told the listeners earlier, I was at a point, because she cussed so much and I was around cussing, so I could out-curse a sailor. As I grew up into, you know, adolescence and then into young manhood and stuff, I even made an art of cursing. I was innovative with cursing because I took it as an art, and I just cursed, and she always cursed. And she also had a loud voice, and a lot of times I would be, like, terrified when she would just call my name. I could, you know, I could be way down the hall or something in another room, and, I mean, it was like she was right there. And, you know, so, you know, that trauma and, you know, and as I said, you know, her, the way that she was, just a mean person, and, you know, the physical abuse. I really wanted my uncle to whip me because I felt that was what the man should do, but she was the one always whipped the beat. You know, I didn't get whippings, I got beatings. And sometimes, now, my uncle, he never would beat me, but sometimes he would stop her because she would just be going crazy. As I said, you know, she'd beat me for nothing, pull out an ironing cord, and then, you know, like people, you know, parents whoop their children on the butt, on the behind. I didn't get that. I got wherever that ironing cord hit me, whether it hit me in my face, my back, my neck, whatever. It didn't matter where she hit me, you know, and it would raise a whip.
It really is amazing that you're still alive, because after all that, and then you went to Vietnam, wow, it's like abuse after abuse after abuse. I see rejection, I see abuse, I see abandonment. I mean, did you ever know your mother or at all, your birth mother?
Well, as I said, I was given away as a baby, okay? Then, you know, when I was five and I came to stay with my brothers, my father and mother, that was only for about a few days. So that was the only, you know, now, that was only a few days that I actually got to stay, and I didn't want to leave to go with my aunt and uncle when they came. However, living in Detroit, they would take me back to New York, you know, every few years, not consistently, but, you know, in a few years we would go, and then my dad would bring the family
to Detroit to be with me. And so that was the interaction that I had with my former family. I put in my mother, father, and my brothers. And so it was intermittent. And I remember this when I was 11. My dad was going to come and take me back. And my aunt brainwashed me before he came. She said and she called him a lot of names. She said, he thinks he's going to come and get you now that you can do for yourself. We did for you when you couldn't do for yourself, and now he wants to take you back when you can do for yourself. He said he's a lowdown, and she just talked that mess of a brother, you know, and she just talked about him like a dog. And because a lot of times she's talking about killing people. And she said, you know, I'll kill him or whatever. And she said, you know, how low down and dirty is that, you know, that we've taken care of you and all of this for all these years. And then now he wants to come and get you. And so long story short, she kept working on me. And when they came to get me, I wanted to go. Because she had been abusing me and been mean. I had to, you know, I didn't, there's stuff that I haven't even told the listeners about. You know, I had, cleaning that house was my job. I mean, I was like a slave there. And she would even go, it was such that she would go behind me with a glove. And if that glove had dirt on, I got my butt whipped. If, you know, when I had to wash the clothes or the dishes, if they weren't done right, I got my butt whipped. Sometimes she takes the wet clothes and baptize. And so I just prayed to the higher power, and I was just there. I said, help me. I said, you know, I'm tired of this. I'm tired of being like this. And I remember that I passed out. After saying that, I was outside, and I remember I passed out under a tree, and I just, boom, zonked out there. And when I woke up, it was like miraculously, I was over it. I was over it. It was like people say, cold turkey or whatever. It was like I didn't have that desire. I had, and I actually stopped. But as I was saying, as I fast forward, my wife thought, you know, the day that she left me, she accused me of using drugs and trying to somehow put it off on her and the children. Because I remember I was in the basement, and I don't remember. What I was doing in the basement, I wasn't using drugs. I had, at that particular time, I was done with it. All right, but she said, she came, I remember she came and she told me, she said, what were you burning downstairs? And I said, burning? I wasn't burning anything. And she was like, you were burning something. And I'm like, no, I wasn't. And she said, yeah, you were down there, you trying to make us high, because, you know, it was vents from down, you know, throughout the house. And she said, you were doing something where it was coming up to the vent and it was asphyxiating us or what. And I'm like, I wasn't doing anything. And she just swore that I was. And she said, you know, she said, we're not staying another day here. We're out of here. You know, you would do something to harm me and the children. And I'm like, there's no way that I would do anything to harm you, because I had already told, I said, I would never do anything to purposely hurt you or our children. But she accused me of that, and I looked at it as a supernatural thing. I was like, how in the hell did something like this happen? I didn't do anything, and she's accusing me, I mean, point blank, like, she's proof positive that I did stuff. And I'm like, okay, now, it was a two-family flat, so there was other people on the other side. They might have been doing something that, you know, and I didn't pick up on nothing.
burning or whatever. But she was she accused that and she was out of there. That she didn't stay that night. She heard the kids, and then that was the beginning of the separation. We never got back together, and ended up divorced. And she would tell me, because I would call her, she would say, "You need help. You need help." And so after we separated, I did go and get help. And then that started me on the cleansing. That helped me start back on getting myself together, because at first I didn't really believe in going getting help like that. But as I did and I saw the value of it and I could appreciate it, I went to therapy for years. And then, of course, I went deep into the Christian experience of conversion and stuff like that. And I had a new mental outlook, a spiritual outlook. And then I wanted to develop a relationship with the Creator. And so I look at it as that's and today. Okay, I'm fast-forwarding to today. That's where I am. Mm-hmm. My desire is to be as close to the Creator as I could be. I've even expressed, like, I want to be able to speak, and it's as though he's, or, you know, I know some people say, well, he's not a he, but mm-hmm. I want to speak as though the Creator is speaking through me.
Right.
I want to be what the Creator wants me to be. I want to do
That's what this whole Corona adventure is about, in my opinion. And I'm not hearing from Naima yet, so I'm gonna let Maika take us on a tapping adventure for all of us, because I think your story gives a little bit of all of our experience, but maybe not as extreme. We weren't in the big house, but your relationships are affected primarily by that type of story. And as you said, you thought you were ready for marriage, and your wife was there to trigger all these things in you that you hadn't healed, and so that marriage had to end. And your relationships are always going to be affected when you have that kind of life, young life, of trauma and abuse and rejection and abandonment. That's what we want to really get across tonight with everyone, that if you can be honest with yourself, then you can have that intimate relationship with the Creator, because that is who you are. Your kingdom is within you. And you got to be honest with yourself to get rid of all that angst for drugs, for alcohol, for marijuana, whatever. You got to be honest with yourself. What is it about your past that has caused you angst of rejection or abandonment or abuse? You had so much abuse, my goodness. And that whipping, we have an author, Asada, has wrote a book about don't spank your children. And you just demonstrated so well about the anger that is in parents who use coat hangers and wires and things to abuse their children now. So, Maika, I want to bring Maika back. I'm not hearing from Naima. So, I'm going to let Maika lead us in some tapping for all of us. I think we can all tap for our brothers, sisters, I'm just feeling all that abuse of my brother. And it just shows that we're all, if you feel what he went through right now, it just shows that we're all one in this earth. And that's why we got to get over the division and the abuses, because you're just harming yourself. Maika, how would you like to lead us into some healing energy?
First of all, Michael, where were you born at?
Well, I was born in Brooklyn.
Oh, Brooklyn, New York. Uh-huh.
Yes.
Okay, great. You know, as an astrologer, I cast charts on people, and I noticed that you have a very, you came into this world with a lot of associates from past lives, And that can be seen in the chart by clustered planets. And you have at least three sections in your chart with more than three planets together. So you have had a lot to work out in this lifetime. And I would I'd like to talk to you further after the show, because I may be able to be of assistance with you or for you, because it's one of the things that I do. So right now we're just going to have a group tapping for it is very important, because I'm guided by the Spirit to do this. So even though as a child I was not protected. I was abused. I was unwanted. I was an uh-oh baby. I wasn't planned. I wasn't welcome. I still love. And totally accept myself. I'm so sorry, Michael, and anybody else. We're tapping on the karate chop point on the hand. On the side, right under the little finger. Just tap on that point right now as we're saying this. Okay?
And I'm demonstrating on Facebook.
Great. Right. So, Gordon, I was abused. I didn't experience love. I didn't experience real connection. I had to interpret life the best way I could. And that was kind of skewed.
Sometimes I didn't have a mother.
Sometimes I didn't have a father. A grandmother or a grandfather. I had to make my way on my own. And because of this, I was injured. Those who cared for me did the best that they could. But there was still a void. Filled with my fears and anxiety. Overflowing with guilt and shame. But I still love. And totally accept myself. In spite of all that's happened to me prior to this moment. That was injurious to my well-being. I forgive myself. For having planted that seed in me. Thank you all for releasing. Okay, now, the next point we're going to tap on is where the eyebrows would meet if over the bridge of the nose if they did meet. And you tap there, and you say all of the above. Another thing that you can do, if you would, you can give all of that past residue of imbalance a color. You can give it a color. And you can see the color dissipating as we continue to tap. Okay? So I'm releasing and letting go of this.
Ten to a zero.
On the side of the eye, there's a little bone on the side of the eye. And all of this tapping is gentle. It's These are meridian points that come to the top of the skin. So you don't have to pound yourself or hurt yourself. Okay? Tapping there. 10 to a 0.
And 10 to a 0.
All the above, all the above, all the above.
All the above, all the above, all
holding
the above.
Holding on to none.
Holding on to none.
Freeing myself from my past, my frozen past.
Bring myself from my frozen past.
I allow the waters of life to flow in me now.
I allow the waters of life to flow in me now.
Under the eye, there's another little bone. Tap gently on that little bone. I breathe deep into my belly to release all that is no longer beneficial to me.
I dig deep into my belly to release that is no longer beneficial to me.
I free myself.
I free myself.
Right now.
Right now.
Under the nose. I am one with the Spirit of God.
I am one with the Spirit of Yah.
And in Yah, there is only light.
In Yah, there is only light.
All darkness is now gone.
All darkness is now gone.
Under the lip, I am one with the light.
I am one with the light.
I am free from the darkness.
I am free from the darkness.
Of the planetary night.
Of the planetary night.
The dawn is here.
The dawn is here.
And the light shineth and is bright.
And the light shining bright.
Yes. Now, the collarbone, tapping there. My life is a miracle.
My life is a miracle.
I am a living example of that miracle.
I'm a living example.
Yes, because I received the invitation.
Because I received the invitation.
As a soul.
As a
to enter a body.
Enter the body.
On the earth.
On the earth.
And so I am a living soul in
and
a
so
physical body.
In a physical body.
And now I remember who I am.
And now I remember who I am.
And activate all the powers of the heavens that are within my being.
And activate all the powers of the heaven that are in my being.
I'm no weakling.
I'm no weakling.
I'm not of this earth.
I'm not of this earth.
I'm of the heavens.
I'm of the heavens.
And I have all the power that heaven gives to me.
And I have all the power that heaven gives to me.
I have no reason to fear anything.
I have no reason to fear anything.
Fear is an illusion.
Fear is an illusion.
Given to me to weaken me.
Given to me to weaken me.
I release fear from my being right now.
I release fear from my being right now.
All fear.
All fear.
Fear of ghosts.
Fear of ghosts.
Fear of being violated.
Fear of being violated.
Fear of catching the COVID or its after effects.
Fear of catching the COVID or its after effects.
Fear that I can be a slave.
Fear that I can be a slave.
Fear that I can be forced to do things that I choose not to do.
Fear that I could be forced to do things that I choose not to do.
I release all these fears, fears of mice, fears of cats, fears of dogs.
All these fears, fears of mice, fears of cats, fears of dogs.
This fear, any type of fear, release it now.
Releasing now all types of fears.
Man cannot be free. Man, male, female cannot be free. It's enslaved by fear.
Man cannot be free if enslaved by fear.
Now, under the arm, I'm releasing all these elements that are no longer of any benefit to my life. as I go forward into the light.
That are no longer any benefit to the light.
And so it is.
And so it is.
Now you're going to tap on the top of your head. So be it.
So be it.
And so it is.
And so it is.
I am free.
I am free.
To live a new life.
To live a new life.
Filled with light.
Filled
of which
with
I
light.
Am. I am a light being.
I am a light being.
Now, you're going to take three ha breaths. And the ha breath is like this. Ha. And you do that three times.
Ha.
Ha. Oh, God is good.
Hallelujah, hallelujah. Thank you, Maika. I'm going to play a little bit of music before we go, just so we can have some melody to think about. Born of water, cleansed and powerful, healing, changing, I am. As we change the frequency that is keeping us in prison and safe. We are new beings tonight in
I want to thank Maisha for what she did.
Well, we are just beginning, I think, to illuminate and shine bright the truth of our soul, because we still got a global family that needs help, help, help. So let us be sending out lots of love and healing energy to the global family. And I'm going to open up Maika. Thank you so much. Mikael, I love you so much for all that you do and all that you are. And we must get together again. Let's get together in a sweat lodge.
Yeah, that sounds good. I was talking to Brother Kwame about that.
Okay.
The other day.
We're all,
yeah.
we're all within a reasonable distance of driving. Like airplane right now, so let's just plan to drive some, meet up somewhere and drive. So have a beautiful week, my brother. I'll probably be down that way this week
every show
in Vero Beach sometime. But until we meet again, be safe and be blessed.
Right, thank you, and you too.
You can also hear today's show on
the Female Solution
Facebook page. Go to www.facebook.com/TheFemaleSolution.
All right.
Leave your comments about today's show. You can always reach me on my website at www.naimalatif.com.
Keep up the light. Everybody have a great week.
Watch our TV shows. Listen to our radio shows. Order our books. And be sure to get your copy of the book, The Female Solution. On behalf of our team of radio hosts, I'd like to thank all of you who participated in today's discussion. And to our global family listening from all around the world, we say thank you. To our family in China, Sheshe. India, Zanyaba. Japan, Arigato. Korea, Kamsahamnida. Russia, Spasiba. Germany, Danke. Poland, Dziękuję. France, Merci. Spain, Gracias. Italy, Grazie. Egypt, Shukran. Ghana, Medasi. Nigeria, Eshe. South Africa, Ngiyabonga. Senegal, Geret. Kenya, Asante. Israel, Toda. Pakistan, Shukriya. Afghanistan, Tashakur. Saudi Arabia, Shukran. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. Thank you. And may peace be upon you and the mercy of God and God's blessing.